The day turned out to be nearly as trying as war. At least one carpet made the flight from Klatch, and there was a constant stream of messages between the palace and the embassy. A crowd still hung around outside the palace. Things were happening, and even if they did not know what they were, they weren't going to miss them. If any history was going to occur, they wanted to watch it. Vimes went home. To his amazement, the door was answered by Willikins. He had his sleeves rolled up and was wearing a long green apron.
"You? How the hell did you get back so quickly?" said Vimes. "Sorry, I didn't mean to be impolite."
"I inveigled myself onto Lord Rust's ship in the general confusion, sir. I did not wish to let things go to wrack and ruin here. The silverware is frankly disgusting, I'm afraid. The gardener does not have the least idea how to do it. Allow me to apologise in advance for the shocking condition of the cutlery, sir."
"A few days ago you were biting people's noses off."
"Ah, you must not believe Private Bork, sir," said the butler, as Vimes stepped in. "It was only one nose."
"And now you've hurried back to polish the silver?"
"It does not do to let standards slip, sir." He stopped.
"Sir?"
"Yes?" "Did we win?"
Vimes looked into the round pink face.
We didn't lose, Willikins," he said.
"We couldn't let a foreign despot vase a hand to Ankh-Morpork, could we, sir?" said the butler.
There was a slight tremble in his voice.
"I suppose not."
"So it was right what we did?"
"I suppose so.
The gardener was saying that Lord Vetinari put one over on the Klatchians, sir."
"I don't see why not. He's done it with everyone else."
"That would be very satisfactory, sir. Lady Sybil is in the slightly pink drawing room, sir."
She was knitting inexpertly when Vimes came in, but rose and gave him a kiss.
"I heard the news," she said. "Well done."
She looked him up and down. As far as she could see, he was all there.
"I'm not sure that we won."
"Getting you back alive counts as a win, Sam. Although, of course, I wouldn't say that in front of Lady Selachie."
Sybil waved the knitting at him.
"She's organised a committee to knit socks for our brave lads at the front, but it turns out you're back. And I haven't even worked out how to turn a heel yet. She's probably going to be annoyed."
How long do you think my legs are?"
She looked at the knitting.
"Do you need a scarf?"
He kissed her again.
"I'm going to have a bath and then something to eat," he said.
The water was only lukewarm. Vimes had some hazy idea that Sybil thought that really hot baths might be letting the side down while there was a war on. He was lying with his nose just above the surface when he heard, with the addition of that special gloing, gloing, gloing sound that comes from listening with your ears underwater, some distant talking. Then the door opened.
"Fred's here. Vetinari wants you," said Sybil.
"Already? But we haven't even started dinner."
"I'm coming with you, Sam. He can't keep on calling you out at all hours, you know."
Sam Vimes tried to look as serious as any man can when he's holding a loofah.
"Sybil, I'm the commander of the watch, and he's the ruler of the city. It's not like going to complain to the teacher because I'm not doing well in geography."
"I said, I'm coming with you, Sam."
The boat slipped down its rails and into the water. A stream of bubbles came up. Leonard sighed. He had very carefully refrained from putting the cork in. The current might roll it anywhere. He hoped it had rolled to the deepest pit of the ocean, or even right over the rim. He walked unnoticed through the crowds until he came to the palace. He let himself into the secret corridor and avoided the various traps without thinking, since he himself had designed them. He reached the door to his airy room and unlocked it. When he was inside, he locked it again and pushed the key back under the door, and then he sighed. So that was the world, was it? Clearly a mad place, with madmen in it. Well, from now on, he'd be careful. It was clear that some men would try to turn anything into a weapon. He made himself a cup of tea, a process slightly delayed while he designed a better sort of spoon and a small device to improve the circulation of the boiling water. Then he sat back in his special chair and pulled a lever. Counterweights dropped. Somewhere, water sloshed from one tank to another, bits of the chair creaked and slid into a comfortable position. Leonard stared bleakly out of the skylight. A few seabirds turned lazily in the blue square, circling, hardly moving their wings. After a while, his tea growing cold, Leonard began to draw.
"Lady Sybil, this is an unexpected surprise," said Lord Vetinari,
Good evening, Sir Samuel, and may I say what a nice scarf you're wearing. And Captain Carrot. Please sit down. We have a lot of business to finish. They sat. Firstly, said Lord Bettinari, I have just drafted a proclamation for the town criers. The news is good. The war is officially over, is it? Said Carrot. The war, Captain, never happened. It was a misunderstanding. Never happened, said Vimes. People got killed. Quite so, said Lord Bettinari, and this suggests, does it not, that we should try to understand one another as much as possible. What about the Prince? Oh, I'm sure we can do business with him, Vimes. I don't think so. Prince Kofura? I thought you rather liked the man. What? What happened to the other one? He appears to have gone on a long visit to the country, said the patrician. At some speed. You mean the kind of visit where you don't even stop to pack? That kind of visit, yes. He seems to have upset people. Do we know which country? Said Vimes. Clachistan, I believe. I'm sorry, did I say something funny? Oh, no. Just a thought crossed my mind, that's all. Vetinari leaned back. And so, once again, peace spreads her tranquil blanket. I shouldn't think the Clachians are very happy, though. It is in the nature of people to turn on their leaders when they fail to be lucky, Vetinari added, his expression not changing. Oh, there will no doubt be problems. We shall just have to discuss them. Prince Kufura is an amiable man, very much like most of his ancestors. A flask of wine, a loaf of bread and thou, or at least a selection of thous, and he'd not be too interested in politics. They're as clever as us, said Vimes. We just have to stay ahead of them then, said Vetinari. A brain race, sort of, said Vimes. Better than an arms race. Cheaper, too, said the patrician. He flicked through the papers in front of him. Now then, what was... Oh, yes, the matter of traffic. Traffic? Vimes's brain tried to do a U-turn. Yes, our ancient streets are becoming very congested these days. I hear there is a carter in King's Way who settled down and raised a family while in the queue. And the responsibility for keeping the streets clear is, in fact, one of the most ancient ones incumbent on the watch.
Maybe, sir, but these days...
So you will set up a department, Vimes, to regulate matters. To deal with things. Stolen carts and so on, and keeping the major crossroads clear. And perhaps to fine carters who park for too long and impede the flow and so on. Sergeant Colon and Corporal Nobbs would, I think, be eminently fitted for this work, which I suspect should easily be self-financing.
What is your opinion?
A chance to be self-financing and not get shot at, thought Vimes. They'll think they've died and gone to heaven. Is this some sort of a reward for them, sir? Let us say, Vimes, that where one finds one has a square peg, one should look for a square hole.
I suppose that's all right, sir. Of course, that means I'll have to promote someone.
I am sure I can leave the details to you. A small bonus for each of them would not be out of order. $10, say? Oh, there is one other thing, Vimes, and I am particularly glad that Lady Sybil is here to hear this. I am persuaded to change the title of your office.
Yes?
Commander is rather a mouthful, so I have been reminded that a word that originally meant commander was dux.
Dux Vimes, said Vimes. He heard Sybil gasp.
He was aware of a waiting hush around him, such as may be found between the lighting of a fuse and the bang. He rolled the word over and over in his mind.
Duke, he said.
Oh, no. Sybil, could you wait outside?
Why, Sam?
I need to discuss this very personally with his lordship.
Have a row, you mean?
A discussion. Lady Sybil sighed.
Oh, very well, it's up to you, Sam. You know that.
There are associated matters, said Lord Vetinari when the door closed behind her.
No.
Perhaps you should hear them.
No, you've done this to me before. We've got the watch set up. We've almost got the numbers. The Widows and Orphans Fund is so big the men are queuing up for the dangerous beat.
and the dartboard we've got is nearly new. You can't bribe me into accepting this time. There is nothing we want."
"Stoneface Vimes was a much maligned man, I've always thought," said Vetinari.
"I'm not accepting."
"What?"
Vimes skidded in mid-anger.
"I've always thought that too," said Carrot, loyally.
Vetinari stood up and went to stand by the window, looking down at the broad way with his hands behind his back.
"The thought occurs that this might be time for reconsideration of certain ancient assumptions," said Vetinari.
The meaning enveloped Vimes like a chilly mist.
"You're offering to change history," he said. "Is that it? Rewrite the..." "Oh, my dear Vimes, history changes all the time. It is constantly being re-examined and re-evaluated. Otherwise, how would we be able to keep historians occupied? We can't possibly allow people with their sort of minds to walk around with time on their hands. The chairman of the Guild of Historians is in full agreement with me. I know that the pivotal role of your ancestor in the city's history is ripe for fresh analysis."
"Discussed it with him, have you?" said Vimes.
"Not yet."
Vimes opened and shut his mouth a few times. The patrician went back to his desk and picked up a sheet of paper.
"And of course other details would have to be taken care of," he said.
"Such as," Vimes croaked. "The Vimes coat of arms would be resurrected, of course. It would have to be. I know Lady Sybil was extremely upset when she found you weren't entitled to one. And a coronet, I believe, with knobs on."
"You can take that coronet with the knobs on and sh..."
"Which I hope you will wear on formal occasions, such as, for example, the unveiling of the statue, which has for so long disgraced the city by its absence."
For once, Vimes managed to get ahead of the conversation.
"Old Stoneface again," he said. "That part of it, is it? A statue to Old Stoneface?"
"Well done," said Lord Vetinari. "Not of you, obviously. Putting up a statue to someone who tried to stop a war is not very, statuesque. Of course, if you had butchered 500 of your own men out of arrogant carelessness, we'd be melting the bronze already. No, I was thinking of the first Vimes who tried to make a future and merely made history. I thought perhaps somewhere in Peach Pie Street."
They watched one another like cats, like poker players.
"Top of Broadway," Vimes said hoarsely. "Right in front of the palace."
The patrician glanced out of the window.
"Agreed. I shall enjoy looking at it. And right up close to the wall, out of the wind. Certainly."
Vimes looked nonplussed for a moment.
"We lost people.
17 caught in skirmishes of one sort or another," said Lord Vetinari. "I want financial arrangements will be made for widows and dependents."
Vimes gave up.
"Well done, sir," said Carrot.
The new Duke rubbed his chin.
"But that means I'll have to be married to a duchess," he said. "That's a big fat word, duchess, and Sybil's never been very interested in that sort of thing."
"I bow to your knowledge of the female psyche," said Vetinari. "I saw her face just now. No doubt when she next takes tea with her friends, who I believe include the Duchess of Quirm and Lady Salachi, she will be entirely unmoved, and not faintly smug in any way."
Vimes hesitated. Sybil was an amazingly level-headed woman, of course, and this sort of thing... She'd left it entirely up to him, hadn't she? This sort of thing wouldn't... Well, of course she wouldn't. She... Of course she would, wouldn't she? She wouldn't swank. She'd just be very comfortable knowing that they knew that she knew that they knew.
"All right," he said. "But look, I thought only a king could make someone a duke. It's not like all these knights and barons. That's just, well, political. But something like a duke needs a..."
He looked at Vetinari and then at Carrot. Vetinari had said that he'd been reminded.
"I'm sure if ever there is a king in Ankh-Morpork again, he will choose to ratify my decision," said Vetinari smoothly. "And if there never is a king, well, I see no practical problems."
"I'm bought and sold, aren't I?" said Vimes, shaking his head.
"Bought and sold."
"Not at all," said Vetinari.
"Yes, I am. We all are. Even Rust. And all those poor buggers who went off to get slaughtered. We're not part of the big picture, right? We're just bought and sold."
Vetinari was suddenly in front of Vimes, his chair hitting the floor behind his desk.
Really?
Men marched away, Vimes, and men marched back. How glorious the battles would have been had they never had to fight. He hesitated and then shrugged.
And you say bought and sold. All right. But not, I think, needlessly spent.
The patrician flashed one of those sharp, fleeting little smiles to say that something that wasn't very funny had nevertheless amused him.
Veni vici vetinare.
Seaweed floated away on aimless currents. Apart from the driftwood, there was nothing to show that Leshp had ever been. Seabirds wheeled, but their cries were more or less drowned out by the argument going on just above sea level.
It is entirely our wood, you nodding acquaintance of a dog.
Oh, really? On your side of the island, is it? I don't think so.
It floated up.
How do you know we didn't have some driftwood on our side of the island? Anyway, we've still got a barrel of fresh water, camel breath.
All right, we'll share. You can have half the raft.
Aha, aha, aha. Want to negotiate, eh? Now we've got you over a barrel.
Can we just say yes, Dad? I'm fed up with treading water.
And you'll have to do your share of the paddling.
Of course.
The birds glided and turned, white scribbles against the clear blue sky.
To Ankh Morpork! To Klatch!
Down below, as the sunken mountain of Leshp settled further onto the seabed, the curious squid jetted back along its curious streets. They had no idea why, at enormous intervals, their city disappeared up into the sky, but it never went away for very long. It was just one of those things. Things happened, or sometimes they didn't. The curious squid just assumed that it all worked out sooner or later. A shark swam by. If anyone had risked placing an ear to its side, they would have heard,
bingly, bingly, beep, 3 p.m, eat, hunger, swim. Things to do today, swim, hunger, eat. 3:05 p.m, feeding frenzy.
It wasn't the most interesting of schedules, but it was very easy to organise. Unusually, Sergeant Colon had put himself on the patrol roster. It was good to get out in the cool air. And also, for some reason, the news had got around that the watch was somehow bound up with what seemed in some indefinable way to have been a victory, which meant that a watch uniform was probably good for the odd free pint at the back door of the occasional pub. He patrolled with Corporal Nobbs. They walked with the confident tread of men who had been places and seen things. With a true copper's instinct, the tread took them past mundane meals. Mr. Goriff was cleaning the windows. He stopped when he saw them and darted inside.
"Call that gratitude?" sniffed Colon.
The man reappeared, carrying two large packages.
"My wife made this specially for you," he said.
He added,
"She said she knew you'd be along."
Colon pulled aside the waxed paper.
"My word," he said. "Special Ankh Mor pork curry," said Mr. Goriff, "containing yellow curry powder, big lumps of swede, green peas, and soggy sultanas, the
size of eggs," said Nobby.
"Thank you very much," said Colon.
"How's your lad, then, Mr. Goriff?"
"He says you have set him an example, and now he will be a watchman when he grows up."
"Ah, right," said Colon happily. "That'll please Mr. Vimes. You just tell him..."
"In Al-Khali," said Goriff. "He is staying with my brother."
"Oh, well... fair enough, then. Thanks for the curry, anyway."
"What sort of example do you think he meant?" said Nobby, as they strolled away.
"The good sort, obviously," said Colon through a mouthful of mildly spiced swede.
"Yeah, right."
Chewing slowly and walking even slower, they headed towards the docks.
"I was gonna write Barna a letter," said Nobby after a while.
"Yeah, but she thought you was a woman, Nobby."
"Right. So she saw, like, my inner self, shorn of...
Nobby's lips moved as he concentrated.
"Shorn of surface thingy. That's what Angua said. Anyway, then I thought, well, her boyfriend will be coming back, so I thought I'd be noble about it and give her up. 'Cause he might be a stroppy bloke too," said Sergeant Colon. "I never thought about that, Sarge."
They paced for a while.
"It's a far, far better thing I do now than I have ever done before," said Nobby.
"Right,"
said Sergeant Colon. They walked on in silence for a while, and he added,
"Of course, That's not difficult. I still got the hanky she gave me, look. Very nice, Nobby. That's genuine Kletchian silk, that is. Yeah, it looks very nice. I'm never gonna wash it, Sarge. You soppy old thing, Nobby, said Fred Colan. He watched Corporal Nobbs blow his nose. So, you're gonna stop using it, are you? He said doubtfully. It still bends, Sarge, see? Nobby demonstrated. Yeah, right. Silly of me to ask, really.
Overhead, the weather vanes started to creak round.
Made me a lot more understanding about women, that experience, said Nobby.
Colan, a much married man, said nothing.
I met Verity Pushbram this afternoon, Nobby went on, and I said, how about coming out with me tonight? And I don't mind about the squint at all, and I've got this expensive, exotic perfume which'll totally disguise your smell. And she said, bugger off, and threw an eel at me. Not good then, said Colan. Oh yeah, Sarge, 'cause she used to just curse when she saw me. And I've still got the eel, and there's a good feed off it, so I look upon it as a very positive step. Could be, just so long as you give someone that scent soon, eh? Only even the people across the street are starting to complain.
Their feet, moving like bees towards a flower, had found their way to the waterfront. They looked up at the Clatchian's head on its spike.
It's only wooden, said Colan.
Nobby said nothing.
And it's like part of our traditional heritage in that,
Colan went on, but hesitantly, as if he didn't believe his own voice. Nobby blew his nose again, an exercise which, with all its little arpeggios and flourishes, went on for some time. The sergeant gave in. Some things didn't seem quite the same anymore, he had to admit.
I've never really liked the place. Let's go to the bunch of grapes then, all right?
Nobby nodded.
Anyway, the beer here is frankly piss, said Colan.
Lady Sybil held her handkerchief in front of her husband. Spit, she commanded. Then she carefully cleaned a smut off his cheek.
There, now you look very ducal, said Vimes gloomily. I thought I'd done this once already.
They never actually had the convivium after all that fuss, said Lady Sybil, picking some microscopic lint off his doublet. It's got to be held.
You'd think if I'm a duke I wouldn't have to wear all this damn silly outfit, wouldn't you?
Well, I did point out that you could wear the official ducal regalia, dear.
Yes, I've seen it. White silk stockings are not me.
Well, you've got the calves for them.
I think I'll stick with the commander's costume, said Vimes quickly.
Arch-Chancellor Ridcully hurried up.
We're ready for you now, Lord Vi.
Call me Sir Samuel, said Vimes. I could just about live with that.
Well, we found the bursar in one of the attics, so I think we can make a start, if you'll take your place.
Vimes walked to the head of the procession, feeling every gaze on him, hearing the whispers. Maybe you could get chucked out of the peerage. He'd have to look that up. Although, considering what lords had got up to in the past, it would have to be for something really, really awful. Still, the drawings of the statue looked good, and he'd seen what was going to go into the history books. Making history, it turned out, was quite easy. It was what got written down. It was as simple as that.
Jolly good, Ridcully bellowed above the buzz. Now, if we all step smartly and follow Lord Commander Sir Samuel, we ought to be back here for lunch no later than 1:30. Is the choir ready? No one is treading on anyone else's robes. Then off we go.
Vimes set out at the mandatory slow walking pace. He heard the procession start up behind him. There were no doubt problems, as there always are on civic occasions, which have to involve the old and deaf and the young and the stupid. Several people were probably already walking in the wrong direction. As he stepped out into Sartor Square, there were the jeers and various flatulent noises and murmurs of,
"Who's he, then? Who's he think he is?"
that are the traditional crowd responses on these occasions. But there were one or two cheers, too. He tried to look straight ahead. Silk stockings with garters. Well, they were out. There were a lot of things he'd do for Sybil, but if garters figured anywhere in the relationship, they weren't going to be on him. And everyone said he had to wear a purple robe lined with vermin. They could forget that, too. He'd spent a desperate hour in the library, and all that stuff about the gold knobs and silk stockings was so much marsh gas. Tradition? He'd show them tradition. What the original Dukes wore, as far as he could see, was good, sensible chainmail with blood on it, preferably other people's. There was a scream from the crowd. His head jerked round, and he saw a stout woman sitting on the ground waving her arms.
"He stole my bag, and he never showed me his Thieves' Guild badge."
The procession shunted to a halt as Vimes stared at the figure, legging it across Sartor Square.
"You stop right there, Sidney Pickens," he yelled and leapt forward.
And, of course, very few people do know how tradition is supposed to go. There's a certain mysterious ridiculousness about it by its very nature. Once there was a reason why you had to carry a posy of primroses on Soul Cake Tuesday, but now you did it because that's what was done. Besides, the intelligence of that creature known as a crowd is the square root of the number of people in it. Vimes was running, so the university choir hurried after him, and the people behind the choir saw the gap opening up and responded to the urge to fill it. And then everyone was just running because everyone else was running. There were occasional whimpers from those whose heart, lung, or legs weren't up to this kind of thing, and a bellow from the Arch-Chancellor, who had tried to stand firm in the face of the frantic stampede and was now having his head repeatedly trodden into the cobbles. And apprentice thief Sidney Pickens ran because he'd taken one look over his shoulder and seen the whole of Ankh Morpork society bearing down on him. And that sort of thing has a terrible effect on a growing lad. And Sam Vimes ran. He tore off his cloak and whirled away his plumed hat, and he ran and ran. There would be trouble later on. People would ask questions. But that was later on. For now, gloriously uncomplicated and wonderfully clean, and hopefully with never an end, under a clear sky, in a world untarnished. There was only the chase. That is the end of Jingo. It was written by Terry Pratchett and read by Nigel Planer.